for the love of goats. We are talking about everything goat. Whether you're a goat owner, a breeder, or just a fan of these wonderful creatures, we've got you covered. And now, here's Deborah Neiman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode, which is sponsored by GoatsGivingBirth.com, an online course to help you survive kidding season without losing your mind. I am so excited today to have Chris McLaughlin with me because we're going to talk about so much fun stuff. And the episode is about Angora goats broadly. We're going to talk all about Angoras, but Chris is also a flower farmer. So we're going to get to talk about some really fun stuff with flowers too, and how the goats and the flowers all complement each other. Cause that does sound like a recipe for disaster, but it doesn't have to be. So, without babbling on anymore, welcome, Chris.
Hi, Deborah. Thanks for having me.
I am so glad to have you here. Chris is also the author of a bunch of books, which I'm sure we will be mentioning throughout the podcast because they're going to fit in just perfectly. You know, like she wrote a book about poop, of all things. So we're going to talk about that too because goats have the best poop in the world if you're a gardener. So let's kind of start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about your story. Like, when did you get Angora goats and why did you get Angora goats?
Well, you know, first, the first thing I had as far as fiber is I had Angora rabbits. And at that time, I wasn't actually using the fiber. I really didn't know how to spin. But I would, when I sheared the rabbits, I would give it away to people and things like that. I was actually showing the rabbits. And then what ended up happening was I slowly started moving away from the rabbits. And we made a big move and came at that point, we were not at our farm. We kind of have gone from farm to farm and then, you know, suburban home and then farm. So it's kind of was like that. And when we moved back out to a farm, my daughter for Christmas found a rescue place that had some goats that had been displaced and they were Angora goats. And I went there. She said, Mom, I want to give this to you for Christmas. I was all for it. And we went there and all of them had been taken but one. And so of course I don't really like to do that with goats. We had already had we had a couple of Nigerian dwarfs at our house, so we thought we'd bring a couple of Angoras, and it turned out there was only one. So we brought her home. That's Betty White. We still have Betty White to this day. Yep, and she's getting up in age, and actually we're a little concerned that she's getting pretty old. But she, you know, always just the shyest thing and everything, but wonderful fiber, and it just really got me really to understand how different fibers are. I mean, going from Angora rabbit to Angora goat, and I want to explain the difference between that, those two words. Both of them are originally from, you know, Turkey, Ankara, that sort of thing, which is where they get the term Angora. But Angora goats do not produce Angora. They produce mohair. So, the mohair fiber is very different from Angora rabbit. It's even different from sheep and alpacas and all of those things. It's super different sort of fiber. And so that got me kind of excited. And I happened to know a guy, oh my goodness. He was like the gateway drug. It was like the minute I opened my mouth. Oh my gosh. And then that's Alan Mezick at Eureka Mohair Farm. He is a rabbit judge, which I had known for many years. What I didn't know was he raised Angora goats, and that was like one of his big loves. And I did not know that at the time. But the second I opened my mouth and said I had this goat, he's like tossing goats at me. Oh, you got to check this one out. You got to check. And all of a sudden I'm raising Angora goats. So yeah, it was like, there it was. And they're wonderful. As you know, goats, for me, they're so personable. I find them so curious. We like that at our house. Mm-hmm. Some people really prefer, and I'm not saying they're not low key. These are actually, the Angora goats are kind of the low key goats, I think, of the goat world. They don't test fences all that much unless they're in rut. If they're in rut, like, forget it, all bets are off. But yeah, but you know, but other than that, they really, really respect the fences. I mean, there really has to be sort of a gap for them to go, huh. And you know, my Nigerian dwarfs could actually use, you know, power tools, right? They would hook things together. I mean, they could get out of anything. It was super funny. And we still loved our Nigerians, doesn't matter. But we found these guys were a little more laid back, and they're very friendly. But at the same time, they maintain that same curiosity that we love in goats so much. We like to be doing things around our farm, and they're sticking their head in there wondering what we're doing. To us, it's like, that's what helps make them part of our family. So it's something we enjoy. But these guys, you know, they're the highest fiber producers in the world. So they need to be shorn every 6 months. You could go a little longer if you want a longer staple length. You can do that. But these guys produce an inch of fiber a month. And so what happens is, maybe if you're in an area that has, you know, high humidity, you might get a little more matting a little bit quicker. So those people that live in high humidity areas in general will make sure that every 6 months they're shorn, because much after that, they start to get kind of matted and stuff just because of the atmosphere. So, oh my goodness, they produce so much fiber. It's just absolutely amazing. And we couldn't believe even a small number of goats, how much we got off of them. I mean, every 6 months, you know, you're getting these giant fleeces. And so, you know, we just really quickly fell in love with that aspect too. We always had enough for selling or using to make into yarn or, you know, whatever we were doing. Some people felt, which it doesn't felt all that well. So we add a little bit of sheep's wool, but then it's like wonderful. So anyway, we just, you know, we enjoy, you know, their luxury fiber, which is so brilliant. And it's very soft and shiny, which is wonderful to add to almost any other fiber. It's going to give that luster to it, add a little thing. And, you know, we love their little dog-like personalities. And they're not big goats. I mean, they look, when someone sees a photo of them in full coat, they look like they're kind of on the bigger side, like maybe like a big dairy goat. They're really not. When I shear my does, for instance, they are probably, I kid you not, maybe 2 inches, maybe taller than my Nigerian dwarfs. They're not big animals. That said, there are different lines, just like anybody else. Some people have much taller ones, and some people have very, very small ones. It's just the line of them. But they're easy to handle for everybody. I mean, so that's a nice thing, too. That was one thing we really liked.
Uh-huh. So other than what you've mentioned, right, because I was curious about the difference between them and Nigerians. Do you think they're as hardy as Nigerians? Or, because I've heard some people say that Angoras are very delicate animals. And I just kind of wondered if they're comparing them to sheep or...
You know, this is so interesting. So I got two things to say about this.
Okay.
What is that? You know, it's interesting. As far as goats go, I haven't had every goat in the world, clearly.
Right.
But I would say they are the most delicate. But that said, where I am in Northern California, and people in Texas, place where it's dry, places like that, they just have, and you know, you're the worm person, right?
I mean, oh, yeah.
You know more about worms than I know. But I will tell you that across the country, I see much more problems with worms in those very wet regions and things like that. Mm-hmm. So they become more susceptible. Of course, you're shearing them and then they get cold, and they really do have to have a lot of, you know, just protection around them. But they are a little more delicate. But I wouldn't say they drop like flies. I mean, you know, or anything. And certainly not where I live. I live, they're very hardy. They're not any less hardy than my Nigerians. But I think it's because of where I live. I don't think that's across the board. The other thing is so interesting. I have heard people say, and I don't know if they just don't raise goats, or maybe they haven't had as much goat experience, or they've had sheep experience. I'm not sure. But maybe it's just different visions. And I mentioned in my book, and I hope I'm not 100% wrong, but I find that the kids are much, you know, if something's orphaned and you have to bottle feed and things like that, I have found that the kids are way hardier than sheep. Now, I think that depends on the breed of sheep, for sure. But because I belong to the sheep pages and all this, I see so many more people having trouble with keeping these lambs alive. And certainly when I was bottle feeding lambs, I had the same problems. They did survive, but it was really touch and go. And they were orphaned. Their mom didn't want them, and she kept rolling them in the dirt. Of course, then they got navel ill, and oh my goodness, it was like, whatever, right? But they were fine. But with the baby goats, I mean, my gosh, I feel like, I mean, as long as they get that colostrum, I tell you what, you throw anything at, give them a bottle. I mean, they're good. I mean, it's like, so I find that the orphaned kids and stuff, they seem hardier to me than the lambs, but I'm not sure if that's because I could be comparing that to, you know, specific breeds of sheep. I think some are definitely hardier. Obviously, you know, some of the more primitive sheep are going to be hardier than maybe some of our fancy schmancy ones. So I don't really know. So that's very interesting. But I would say as far as goats go, these guys are the most delicate, but it doesn't make me afraid because I know so many people who raise them. And sure, some people struggle with the worm situation. Many don't. But you do have to keep their hooves trimmed. Remember, their fiber is the same thing that their hooves are, right? So my Nigerians, oh my gosh, they're running around, they're on rocks, they're doing their thing. They keep their hooves so, I mean, we trim them, but not nearly. Like with these guys, we do every couple of months, we trim their hooves because that fiber is growing at an inch a month. That's what's happening to their hooves. And so what I have found is that in the wet months, I like to make sure those hooves are nice and flat, trying not to get that soil to come up and, you know, get inside a curled hoof and sort of press against, you know, so they don't get hoof rot, you know, if that happens to be the bacteria in your soil, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Not everybody will get that. But I mean, I try to make it to where it's nice and open and, you know, as much as I can. So that's another thing there. I think other than really like people thinking they're delicate, I think that they're divas. I think they're just a little work, you know? I mean, they really are a little more work. I mean, they even have to be fed a higher protein level because of, you know, these guys, their body says 100% of the time, we must produce.
Right.
It does not care if they're pregnant. It does not care if the animal starts losing weight and becomes a rail. That fiber will be produced and it will be at the cost of the animal. So we do make sure that they are fed very well, high protein, things like that. Whereas I have seen some awesome sheep that people are able to just take and put them out in pasture somewhere and move them from place to place. And they do fine. There's like, it's crazy. They're just totally full and filled up. I kind of feel like, I don't know if that would happen with the Angora goats, maybe unless you had hundreds of acres or something, I suppose. But I do feel like they do need a little help from people to keep that, you know, to be healthy and where they should be in body weight on top of producing that fiber. So, you know, I think that they are, you know, obviously more hands-on. You're shearing twice a year. You're trimming hooves 2 to 3 times, like every 2 to 3 months you're trimming their hooves, just depending on what's growing, you know. So, and then you have to, you know, so I don't shear for the springtime. I don't shear until March, but many kids are born in February. So what we'll do is we'll crutch them. So we'll shear just the lady bits. And so it's a nice clean birth. We can see what's going on. And also so that the babies can get to the teats, because many times what they'll do is they'll find a long, you know, strand of mohair. Yeah, and they'll suck on that and they think like, here I am. And it's like, oh my gosh, no. You know, so we make sure that that udder is nice and clean and the teats are right there. But then we leave that, if we're leaving the fleece on until it's a little longer, we can leave the good parts on and just give them the little crutching, you know, so.
Yeah.
A little, you know, lady trim there. So.
Yeah.
And by the way, I also do a man trim because not all of my guys do this, but some of them are very heavy with the fiber at their bellies and by their pizzle. And they can, what happens is when they pee, then it becomes very wet right there on their stomach and they will get pizzle rot.
Ooh.
It's kind of gross. So what we do is in between shearings, we go in and we just, I put them up on the stand and when I'm doing their toenails, their hooves, Okay, they're toenails. We give a little trim around their pizzle and stuff just to make sure that doesn't happen. So mm-hmm. you can kind of see how you're going to handle these goats, maybe more than you would a different goat, certainly not any more than you would a dairy breed, because dairy uh-huh. breed you're always handling because you're milking. So
right.
Those are very hands-on. But there's a lot of goats, you know, obviously, that that don't need that kind of hands-on. So they do, you know. And then when their little forelocks get really long and we're not ready to shear yet, some people will shear that off. I go out there with a rubber band, you know, ponytail holder, and I just give them ponytails, and they got like these man buns going on. It's pretty great.
So, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, because we call that mohair blind. When they get uh-huh. mohair blind, we do that.
Yeah,
it's pretty cute.
So I have a quick question about the bucks, because most bucks have a very nasty habit of peeing on their faces and peeing on their front legs and things
so
like
delightful.
This.
Yes, so, that beautiful perfume. Oh,
do Angoras do that?
You know what? They do, but here's the cool thing. I love this about Angoras. I love this about Angoras. They come into rut like end of September, beginning of October, something, you know, around there. So in the fall, and then they stay there about through January.
Uh-huh.
And then they come out of rut.
Uh-huh.
So our goats, instead of like, we had some dairy goats next to us at our other house. And when I had dairy goats, I only had does. So I didn't have a buck on my property. So I didn't get to really, really, you know, experience this like I did in this case. He was literally smelly all year round. He had mm-hmm. pee on him all year round. And he was the friendliest little thing, which was sad. But, you know, he just so much urine, and you're trying to scratch his little head and you're trying to, but these guys, so once I shear my bucks, which actually I weathered them, they're in for a big surprise. So once I shear them this time for the spring, this will be a pretty bucky coat, and that whole front end, I won't mess with that.
Okay.
But even the sides and stuff, which is what we'd really keep, it will still smell slightly bucky, but it does wash out. I mean, that part, I don't do the urine soak stuff. I'm not even testing that. Ugh, no. But the next coat they get, the next one they're going to grow for state fair when I want to show in July. So they're going to grow from March till July. They will not pee on themselves at all. They will be just like a doe.
Wow.
So there's a whole beautiful season there where your bucks don't smell at all. So it's just during the rut for these guys. So that's a kind of different than some of the other breeds. So
yeah. That's good, because the fiber is the important thing, and it would be terrible if you were just always shearing them and throwing it away.
Yes. And so let's talk about weathers and the coolness of weathers.
Okay.
So yes, people. Okay. So funny. Okay. I hear people say like, there's not a weather market. I mean, I'm sorry, a buck market, because of course, you know, a buck can cover a lot of does.
Right.
So when you have a lot of baby bucks, and it's like a lot of people will sell them for meat or whatever, which is, I mean, that's certainly fine, but that's really not necessary if when people get these bucks that they weather them, and A, they will never pee on their coat again. That's never going to happen. And B, when you weather them, their fiber remains finer than a buck's ever will.
Ooh.
Because the testosterone in the buck really makes that fiber coarse. And you know, and it's just kind of what they do, you know, it just gets, you know, thicker and everything. It's still soft. It's just thick.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which is what we mean by coarse. And so, you know, and so these guys just mature, and as they turn into older bucks, it gets even like their curls start to get a little straighter and all that. And when you keep a weather, their fiber never changes. They're never going to get pregnant. They'll never have hormones for that. They're never going to make anything pregnant, so there's no hormones for that. They just remain a fiber producer forever of this gorgeous fiber. So it's like really cool. And because they, you know, lose that real oh, I have to breed everything that I see in front of me. Uh-huh. They, you know, they lose all of that. They are really great ambassadors of the breed. I mean, you can, you know, hook them up to carts and teach them to pull carts. They can be in parades. They're docile for children and stuff to, you know, pet and get to know. So when you're taking them out in public, they're really, they've got this gorgeous fiber. They're not acting all masculine. Sorry, all masculine men out there. I mean, we do like you, but, you know, I mean, you know, there's some things that go along with having testicles. I mean, there's just things, you know.
Right, yeah, especially so for goats. I'm so glad I'm not a goat, really, as much as I love them.
I know, you know, and it's like, so I just feel sort of like, you know, you never have to worry, too, about getting into the pen with them. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're in rut, you know, do mm-hmm. not turn your back. And I tell everybody this because, you know, I've had people tell me, oh, I have like this 2-year-old and, you know, he's just my buddy. And he's, I go, uh-huh. Don't turn your back because it, you know, as they get older, they just become more male, especially if they've bred something. They know exactly mm-hmm. what they're supposed to do. And I mean, they can put you on the ground. It is, they're not huge animals, but they, you know, they can do some damage. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we always say, just stay out of the buck pen when everybody's in rut and, you know, you'll be fine. Or at least watch where you're, you know, watch your back. Don't, I back up. I go in there with them sometimes, but I back up and walk around just to make sure somebody doesn't think, oh, she's threatening my, you know, my authority here, mm-hmm. you know, but with the weather, you would never have to do that. So I try to encourage people if they're going to start a fiber farm or they want to test that out, you know, even in the case of sheep, it would work the same way. You know, if you had, you know, instead of a ram, you have a weather, you're going to have a different experience. And sheep, rabbits, alpacas, goats, all these guys that produce fiber, they always produce fiber. You know, with like your dairy breeds, you're looking for something that's going to stay in milk and everything. You don't have to breed with fiber animals for anything mm-hmm. because their fiber just is produced on its own. So I always like to remind people, you don't have to breed things to be a fiber farmer. You can have, you know, a couple of goats and, you know, Angora goats, and then right. you're, you know, you're producing, but you're not necessarily, you know, having the other stuff that goes with it if you don't want to.
Right. So when you first got Betty White, your first Angora, did you put her with your Nigerians? And if yes, how did she do with that?
You know, at first I didn't because I was concerned because she has horns. We do not dehorn our Angoras. Uh-huh. We feel as a whole, as a group, now some people disagree and I totally get it because, you know, hey, you know, whatever your experience has been. But what we found, and as you know, there's blood running through those horns. If you cut one of those big horns off, you're going to, you know, you have like, it looks like a mass murderer has been hanging out.
Right.
And, you know, it's a bloody massacre out there. And so what happens is with these Angoras, they're carrying all this fiber and they get very hot. And in our opinion, the blood flowing through those horns is catching that wind and it's helping cool the blood. So we help that it is a control for temperature for these animals. So when you are looking at the standard of perfection for Angora goats, they always should have their horns. You can't show them without their horns or anything because they need to be complete, you know, how they were meant to be. Uh-huh. And so I thought to myself, well, my Nigerians had been disbudded as babies. And I thought, well, she's just going to hurt them. She's mm-hmm. just going to butt them and they're going to get hurt and all that. Well, I separated them on either side of the fence. And, you know, I knew better than this because that poor goat, you know, their whole mentality is I am safe when I'm in a herd. Uh-huh, that's right. How they acquire their security. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, no, you're going to live over here in this pen by yourself. Well, she couldn't stand it. She just cleared the fence. And I woke up the next morning, she's in there with the Niges. And do you know, those Niges have bossed her around. Like, I'm not kidding you. Dude, those Niges, they will head bash the boys with no horns. I'm like, what? What are you doing? I can't believe it. It's like, you guys, you got a little man's complex going on. But honestly, she was fine. She is my herd queen. She will put everybody in their place if they're acting up. But she's just not. She's not an aggressive goat, so of course she doesn't actually hurt anybody. But mm-hmm. she will lower her head and go, "Hey, over there," you know. But the Nigerians, no. They were the boss. And so I never had to worry. I mean, I know that's been a lot of people's experiences, certainly not everybody's. So you have to be careful of that and make sure that that'll work for you. But all the Angora people I know, the majority of them have had other goat breeds, and they did absolutely fine together. Uh-huh. So, you know, even though their other goats didn't have horns, so mm-hmm. kind of worked out fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about that since you were saying that they seem to be more mellow.
Yeah.
Because I know in the beginning for me, I got a couple of Pygoras, which I only had for 3 months because I literally thought they were going to kill my Nigerians.
Oh, no.
Because they were so horrible.
Oh.
And the they were just terrible. They were very aggressive. It's like they were the perfect example of they have horns and they know it.
Yes. Yes. Well, and I'll tell you what, I will tell you, my bucks know they have it. Now, I had... Up until a couple weeks ago, I had, oh my gosh, 6 bucks in the same pen. I mean pasture. Uh-huh. I had 6 of them together, and believe me, they knew how to use them.
Yeah.
Like they would turn their head sideways and go, bink, get out of the way to the other one. I'm like, whoa, you actually poked him. I mean, like you did what, you know. So they, you know, they do know. They just, you know, without being in rut though, or even when you're talking about the does and stuff, they just don't really have a lot of aggression with them. They're just really mm-hmm. calm. But you know, when you talk about Pygoras, remember that's a Angora goat mixed with a, you know, pygmy, which is, so it's like a Nigora where you're going to mix the Nigerian mm-hmm. with the Angora. They're going to have potentially the same attitude, obviously depending on what comes out. But you know, they might probably really knew what they were, you know, what they were about. They were probably, they knew they could bully them around. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of crazy. Yeah.
So another thing I'm curious about, because this seems like it could be potentially challenging. Again, way back in the beginning when I didn't know any better, I was feeding my goats on the ground until I learned that that was really contributing to their parasite problems. I was just throwing a flake of hay on the ground. So I got hay feeders and I put them in the hay feeders, and I thought that's how my sheep should be fed too. Well, that completely ruined the sheep's fleeces that year. So this seems like a difficult thing to balance, because you have goats that have less parasite resistance than the sheep do. So you really shouldn't be feeding them on the ground, but the hay feeder... I know.
Well, yeah, you know what? I have, I don't have real hay feeders.
Okay.
For one, I'm in California.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, these things are like $900. You know, like, what? You know, so then we kind of just put like these tubs on the ground and we put the hay in the tubs.
Oh, okay.
But what I do is, we line them up on the fence, and then I just kind of trick them. I walk over to one spot. I stick it in the tub, and I just kind of sneak it over the fence and put it down into the tub.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, though, for one, the goats will drag it over the other goats. That happens.
And then
also on occasion, you don't get it down there fast enough, and somebody jumps under you, and you're like, ah, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's very frustrating. But I know other people who have done the regular hay feeders, and then they'll put like boards, you know, like, what am I thinking? Like the flat, oh my gosh, it's like gone out of my head. But it's just the flat boards. They'll put flat sheets of plywood or something, you know, mm-hmm. in the spot where the hay would be loose up at the top. So it's just like a little square at the bottom where they pull the hay out.
Okay.
So it's not falling on their fleece.
Got it.
While they're doing it. So, I mean, I think everyone does it differently. And I feed pelleted feed also.
Uh-huh.
So one time a day, I don't have to worry about that. But the other time a day, I do.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to lie to you. We're not as careful as we should be.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a huge flock. So people who have, you know, 100 of these guys or something, or even 40, that's a lot of goats, you know? I mean, and I could see a lot of hay being everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I just think that that's harder. But we do have to sometimes, I'm doing a lot of VM picking, you know, before I send it off to the mill. You know, I do have to, you know, what I always hope is when a goat gets under that and does that, I always like, it's so funny. I literally say in my head, okay, I've got 2 more months before I shear you, that'll probably fall out. You know, it's like, you know, and we also go in there sometimes, we do this before shows too. We grab their sides with our hands and we shake really hard. So all of this stuff goes flying everywhere. So a lot of the VM will come out like that if you do that, or use a blower. Sandbag. Now you don't want to use something too, you know, you don't want to make it to where it's blowing the locks out. But if you use even a reverse the shop back, and you stand back, you can blow a little bit until, you know, most of it's out, and then shear. Of course, the part you're not going to get is the ringlets. If the, you know, if the VM went inside, you know, the hay went inside those ringlets and then they grew around it, well, that's something you're going to pick out after it's shorn. I mean, then you're kind of just out of luck on that one. But it's a little different in a sheep in that I've never tried to blow out a sheep, but I'm picturing it thinking, I don't know how you would do that. Like they're, because they're kind of like dense, like. Whereas these guys are like locks. These guys fall in locks. They can be dense, but they also kind of have locks you can pick up and blow out under there. So.
Yeah. And sheep have lanolin, which makes the VM stick in there. So I don't really think that it would work with sheep either. But when we had llamas, when they would come to shear the llamas, they would use a shop vac that was reversed and they would blow them out. And it was mind blowing. How much dust and everything came flying out of their coat.
You know what's really funny is to blow dry an Angora rabbit, blow them out. There's all this white dander. It's just on their skin, and sometimes you can see it. Like sometimes you can see it if you part it, but sometimes you just don't really notice it. And then you blow it with this, and all this white stuff is flying. It's all over you. It's all over your walls. It's all over. I mean, it's like it's so crazy. You know, it is a trick with the hay. But as you know, I wouldn't trade. They've got to have the forage. Like I won't feed them fully. I won't feed them fully pelleted feed. It's just not good for their rumen and stuff. So I have to give them the forage, and we're not perfect at it, but we try real hard to, you know, kind of be tricky about getting it down in there before they run all over, you know, jumping all over us. So,
Cause if you're kind of wondering, if you're listening to this and kind of wondering exactly what we're talking about. So what happened with my sheep when I switched to the hay feeders, cause the hay feeders are like up at head height. And so a sheep grabs a mouthful of hay and then they turn their head while they're chewing. And all of this hay starts falling into the coat of the sheep standing next to them.
And this is why I prefer it low to the ground too. If I got feeders, I would get those super short ones that are almost to the ground, and I would do the plywood sheets in there, like I said, so they can only pull it out from the bottom. You know, and it would just keep it just a little bit, you know, low key with the, you know, with the VM flying around. So and VM is short for vegetable matter, if people aren't sure what I'm saying when I say VM.
Thank you for pointing that out.
So
as you mentioned, they are producing 365 days a year. So do you give them grain?
I do not grain. I never grain. I'm really like the only time I can't say I never grain. The only time I would grain is like, you know, we would get something, you know, like say we're shearing. They love to have stuff in there. You know, we have a little bowl on the shearing stand, you know, and so we'll put that in there. And we just feel like it's a little reward. But to be honest, when it comes to males, I'm very knee-jerk with that. I've only one time experienced, you know, animals having the urinary calculi. And that was a horrible experience. In fact, I almost passed out as the vet clipped off the tip of his pizzle. And I literally was holding him for her like, oh yeah, I can handle this. I'm a farmer. And I literally started falling sideways. I thought I was going to pass out. I could, and she's looking at me going, Chris, you can lay down. I'm like, oh, no, I'm fine. She's looking at me going, no, you're really not, you know, but it was just, and the goat was totally fine after that. But it's just that, I worry about that. I worry about, you know, it was really funny when she came and checked on the goats. And that wasn't, by the way, particularly from grain itself, but it was from pure alfalfa. And here in California, pure alfalfa, this is kind of a long story, but it can cause stones in animals and things like that. So we were told at one time, someone said, oh yeah, I do it all the time. And so I did it just because I had these kids that I thought would enjoy it. And I gave it to them. And you know, there was only the one that got the urinary calculi, but she happened to notice that my other ones were kind of laying around. I mean, not on their side. They were sternal, but you know, still, she went and felt their feet and they were hot. I mean, like seriously, this was founder time, you know, I mean, stuff was going to go down. So the grains to me, I don't feel like they're appropriate, especially where I live. If I lived in Nebraska, I mean, where, you know, you got mamas that are milking their babies and stuff, I may look at this very differently, but I am in California. We do get a little snow. We do get freezes, but mostly I feed, 80-20, so it's a 80 orchard grass and 20% alfalfa. They get a little bit, and then I give them a pelleted feed that's an orchard, and of course they get minerals and all that, and they do great. I never, you know, oh, I know what I do sometimes to fatten them up. I give them calf manna in with their pelleted feed, which fattens them up, and oh my goodness, brings on the milk. And I did that with my rabbits, same thing. So and that's just my own unscientific, by the way, no science over here, but just that we've all talked about it. And every one of us who've done the calf manna, it really, it puts weight on and it produces, helps them, I guess, produce more milk. But I felt that has always been completely enough for my guys, you know? So like I said, if I was in a different area, it was super cold or something, I don't want to say don't give them grain, but I worry about the boys. They're the ones who get the urinary calculi for the most part. I think girls can get it, but I think it's the boys we have to worry about. So I get so freaked out by that, you know, I'd almost rather overfeed them the other stuff than give them any kind of grain. Yeah. So
when you say pelleted feeding me, it's just hay pellets.
It is. It's just orchard hay pellets, and I'll mix some calf manna pellets in that. And then I'll also put black oil sunflower seeds in that. And it has a high in selenium. And where we are in our county, we're very low in selenium, like really low. So like when our babies are born, I haven't done this every time. That would be a lie, but mostly they get a shot of BOCE, which is, if no one knows what that is, it's selenium. And I give them a shot every time just, you know, just to get them going. Cause you know, we worry about it because that's the issue we'll have when we start to see an animal doing poorly as a newborn. We go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. They're like a week old and you'll start to see it, you know? So anyway, so I do that, but other than that, no real grain, no cracked corn or, you know, anything like that. I have done rolled oats before a little tiny bit in the beginning when I first had the goats, but I didn't feel like it was really necessary after I started doing everything else. So,
yeah.
I know a lot of people do.
Yeah. I think a lot of us try, when we're new, we try a ton of different things and you see like, that doesn't really make a difference. And so,
Yeah, and that's why it's really hard, too, to say, like, I wouldn't want anyone to walk away from this to say, like, oh, I heard this podcast, never give your goats grain. That's not it. I mean, not at all. It's just that my goats don't need it, and because if they are overloaded, they can founder or they can get urinary calculi, I think, well, if they don't need it, then why am I seeing how much they can, you know, they should have before that happens to them? But I know plenty of people who do it totally successfully, and it's awesome for them. You know, but I'm kind of like, if it's not broken, I don't fix it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So so now I want to talk about what comes out the other end.
Yay. Poop.
I know. Poop. And I know this is really a fun thing for you because one of the books you wrote was on composting.
Yes. That was my first book many, many years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like Yeah, like 11 years ago or so.
I've known you that long?
Yes, long time.
Wow.
I know. We still look young. I don't know. It's crazy.
I know. I don't feel like you've aged at all.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Well, yeah. Tell my gray hair that. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I don't think it could be 11 years.
I know. Wow. It sounds like a long time. Yeah.
Because I remember you sent me a copy of that book, and I read it, and I reviewed it, and I talk about it in all my gardening talks. Is it still out there?
I think it is still out there. I think they're still producing that one. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But I don't, you know, back then, too, it was a complete idiot's guide.
Uh-huh.
They did not do, now that company got swallowed up by Pearson, another company. And so, Pearson got swallowed up, I'm sorry, by DK,
mm-hmm.
which is out of the UK. And they started doing color, all color, you know, so they, all their images. And the Complete Idiot's Guides originally, all those years ago, they were not color. And so, you know, people really gravitate more to the ones that have, know, these really great photos and stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably doesn't do as well as I wish it would, you know, because it's all black and white, just like way back when. But you know, that's okay. But yes, we love poop. We love really everything that comes from the ruminants or the what would you call the I'm gonna think the alpacas are not ruminants or
pseudo ruminants.
Yes. And so, you know, all that poop is so great for your garden, and you toss it in your compost pile and it breaks things down so quickly. And, but it's not super hot the way like maybe horse manure is or chicken manure. Those things really need to be composted or they could burn your plants, and that sort of thing. But when you talk about these ruminants and, or even the rabbit, which is not a ruminant at all, on the other hand, rabbit poop also is a very, what we call, it's probably so unscientific, but it's called the cold manure, just meaning that it's not going to burn your plants. You can sprinkle it all around and it's not going to do that.
Yeah.
But I still like to put it in the compost pile because it actually helps break everything down. So it's awesome. So we like to use our poop. We go and just rake out the pastures. And of course we're getting some of the hay that they're not using anymore, the straw from their bedding, their manure. It's all coming together. We add it to our compost pile, and then we've got more compost to put in our flower beds. So, you know, that's all kind of, you know, all good stuff that comes from these animals. So it's not like dog or cat or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not going to be doing that with that. So,
right.
Yeah.
And then you have a flower farm, and I think this is really cool. So tell us a little bit about how the flower farm and the Angoras work together.
Well, yeah, right. Well, for one, we make sure the goats can't get out because, oh my goodness, they will love everything. It doesn't matter, you know, they love it. But because my goats, you know, like I said, other than when they're in a rut, they will test those fences because they're determined to get to the ladies. But at any other time, or if you just have does or weathers, they're just not super, you know, pushy about getting out. So they don't have to be super amazingly strong. Just, you know, just make them reach the ground and make it so they can't lift it up. You're all good. And of course we like the 2-inch by 4-inch no climb because again, our goats have horns. And if you use regular field fencing and they get their little head out there, sometimes their horns get caught.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you could have a panicked goat that could, they start flipping around, they could break their own neck. But also, now they're trapped for a predator.
Yeah.
So they're very easy prey. So we don't ever like that. So we like the no-climb fencing. So we do that. And, you know, these guys are really good about, you know, not getting out and stuff. But we like their manure for the garden. And then also on the flower farm, we also happen to grow dye plants that we use to dye fiber with, which is our mohair fiber. And so their manure is helping grow the dye plants, which in turn the dye plants are going to be dyed onto the, you know, mohair. So it's all kind of working in a great circle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is kind of a nice, you know, thing. And also a lot of the herbs that we grow, which we do use for bouquets, chamomile and things like that, that can be given to the goats. That's all great stuff, you know. a lot of herbs are, as you know, wonderful for our animals as well as us. So they all can kind of work together. They all kind of provide something for the other. Mm-hmm. So we enjoy having the animals, you know, with the flowers, because not with them physically, but you know,
right.
we just think that they really complement each other in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's funny because at first glance, you think that doesn't sound like a very good combination.
I know. I've actually had people say to me like, I think you're just asking for disaster. And I'm like, well, you know, but it's worked for us. And, you know, it's funny. I think that, you know, anything can happen. I mean, you know, when you have a flower farm, oh my gosh, like a really crazy wind comes, it could level your entire flowers. It could just level them out like overnight, bam. Right. You know, a bad hailstorm at the wrong time, same thing, you know? So, you know, that kind of thing can happen too. I mean, my goats, I mean, I'm going to be honest, I've never caught them in a garden without me. That's never happened. And I think it just really is because, you know, we just make sure that the fences are good, but also they're just not really that pushy. You know, they don't get out. So I have had them get out, but because we have so many deer, we have billions of deer. We have to fence off the flower gardens as well. Anywhere we garden, we have to fence it off. Uh-huh. So the goats are inside fencing, and then my flowers are inside fencing. So what happens is, like one time, my buck, the latch wasn't latched. He got out. He's just walking around, but he never got in the flowers. He just walked around our acreage, just hanging out. Mm-hmm. You know, eating the natural trees, and it was fine. Yeah. So they have to get through one barrier and then into the next barrier, you know. So obviously having them not share a fence line is the smartest way to go.
Yeah.
It's kind of two barriers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, with the does and the bucks. Yeah. Don't share a fence line.
Exactly.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe how fast the time has flown. It's been so much fun talking to you about all of this. And everybody got a little bonus here. We went beyond goats and talked about gardening and composting and stuff. Where can people find, what books have you had come out lately that you want to let people know about?
Well, the last one that came out this last year is Raising Animals for Fiber. And it's producing wool from sheep, goats, alpacas, and rabbits in your backyard. So it's predominantly about a small, you know, a small operation. We're not talking about something giant here, but more like backyard animal raising or small acreage. And then the one before that, which I love as well, is Growing Heirloom Flowers. And that came out the year before. And I love that one. And that one isn't necessarily about you know, cutting flowers that you would use commercially. They're just more just for your own use and, you know, for the love of them. Some of those flowers hold up best just, you know, being cut straight from the garden, going into your house. They might not be for, you know, long-term, you know, holding, but they're all the old-fashioned flowers that have been tried and true through time, have all great scents and all that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, kind of a fun book too.
Yeah. And what's the name of your book about natural dyes?
Oh, that one's called A Garden to Die For.
Okay.
And yeah, that one's about, yeah, that one came out before the heirloom one. And I love that one. And it's very basic. I mean, you know, really it's an experimenter's book. It's basic. And yet once you do this stuff in there, you can do like a ton of things. I mean, you just, you know, it's really easy to do and really rewarding and fun, to be honest. It's amazing. Alchemy is like just amazing anyway. You feel so scientific and, you know, you can change color just by, you know, you've got this thing going and then you add, you know, washing soda to it. Just put a tablespoon in there. All of a sudden it goes whoop and turns green, you know? So, you know what I mean? Wow. It's just sort of like changes and, you know, and so it's really a fun thing to play with, even if you just do it one time, it's fun to mess with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and talking about angoras.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm really resisting the urge to get some. They're so cute.
They are beautiful. Oh my goodness. They're just so cute. And so many people say to me, it's so great. They look at me and they're just like, I love your sheep. Oh my gosh, your sheep are so cute. And then it's so much fun then because I get to launch into, they're goats. And they're like, what do you mean they're goats? So yeah, they're really cool. They're really neat looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know I've said it already, but thank you again. And it was so much fun chatting.
Well, thank you so much.
And that's it for today. Thanks so much for joining us. And be sure to tune in next week when I interview Dr. Tom Terrell about Lespedeza, which is a legume that helps to control parasites.